I'll be too nervous to. I'll probably lost for words.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lost Words Betting Podcast. I'm joined again by Bradley Todd. Brad, hello.
Good evening, Tom. It's good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back, mate, after your trip away. I know it's been an eventful one and a busy one, so I'm sure you're ready to dive back into golf. And if anything, normally these Monday, Tuesdays are hectic for you, but I imagine it's probably a little bit calmer than it was the last couple of weeks.
I don't know, because I still kept myself busy whilst I was in India. And I couldn't recommend that place enough. It is fascinating, just quickly on it, but it's just chaotic, organized chaos. I tried as well to get to the Gujarat Open, which is a PGA Tour of India event, but the missus wasn't having any of it. And now obviously the Challenge Tour's there, so I've just missed that. And then we got the Hero Open, so I should have just stayed out there. Really, there's plenty of golf going on out there at the moment.
Should have done, really. I was hoping you were going to do a little scouting trip, but it wasn't. We'll blame
it to. Just didn't get the green light.
We'll blame future Mrs. Todd for that. but no, it's good to have you back, mate. I'm glad you enjoyed your trip. Fairly eventful couple of weeks since you've been gone. Players' Championship, incredible finish over there.
Yeah, wasn't it just?
Unfortunately, with Harmon for us, and I don't know, Wyndham Clark as well for other people, and just come up slightly too short, but it is what it is. Scottie Scheffler, if you're getting beat by anyone, at least it's Scottie Scheffler.
Exactly. You don't mind it so much if it's him coming out on top. A bit of normality returned as well, him going back to back in events.
It is. I think that's what everyone was waiting for, wasn't it? But I think the only thing that really frustrates me is getting beat by Scottie Scheffler when he's got basically a stiff neck, which is really concerning.
Oh, yeah, I know. Especially when you saw Ted Scott's interview afterwards, I didn't think he could carry on Friday. It's ridiculous.
It's wild, isn't it? But a lot of talk about him at the moment being the best player since Tiger Woods. I don't know if I'm ready to say that yet. I certainly would say best ball striker since Tiger Woods. Best performance. Best, I would say, stretch since Tiger, maybe. But I think just...
He needs to get a few more majors under his belt, and then we can start...
I think it's tough. Yeah, you look at like Brooks Koepka and you think, okay, well, he's one of those majors, but didn't do a lot outside of those. But then you say that he's still had a couple of Phoenix Opens wins. He's still had a WGC in there as well. So like he definitely won plenty enough in that time to probably warrant being the best player in the world for a couple of years there. And he had an injury in between all that as well. So I do think you've kind of got to pump the brakes. Not even so much that Brooks Koepka was better than Scottie Scheffler, but just a sense of like it seems so clear cut that it's like, oh, Scheffler's definitely the best, and I don't know if it's quite that easy.
It all comes down to it though. It always comes down to majors, doesn't it? When you're grading the golfer, it really does.
He could win four of the next six and completely change narrative, couldn't he? But it's interesting as we get closer to the Masters how he performs.
He's certainly looking red-hot favourite for the Masters, though, let's put it that way.
He is, yeah. Slightly concerned we've got to take him on, but hopefully on the week of, because I'll have to take him on by my own principles. So looking forward to that, though. So into this week, Brad, I think we've got two decent events, actually, in terms of betting. We've got the Singapore Classic, where Shane Lowry is a 9-1 favourite, followed by sponsors exemption Paul Casey at 14-1, Matthew Pavon at 14-1, Rasmus Højgaard 16, Tom McKibben 20, and then it's 25-1 and bigger the rest. We had a chat, didn't we, over the weekend, Brad, when we saw the kind of entry list come out about Paul Casey, and we thought potentially we would want to bet him. The number could be good enough. We expected Lowry to go our favourite. He has. Happy to take on 9-1 Shane Lowry. I'm not so comfortable taking on Paul Casey, despite him coming into the market. And Brad, that's why you're starting your betting this week.
That is, yeah. I remember we had that little discussion, and he did open at 18-1, but yeah. I still think 14-1 is fine. He is second favourite. I do think he's the second best player in the field, possibly the best. I mean, it's hard to judge now he's gone to live, but what we do know is that we need to start like giving these players some respect when they do come over and play on the DP World Tour. I mean, we saw what happened at the start of the season. Burmester won twice. Usti won back-to-back. Neiman won in Australia. So yeah, you've got to give him some respect. And in case he's been in excellent form recently. He lost out in a playoff in Hong Kong a couple of weeks back. He also finished 11th in Mexico, 5th in the Las Vegas event as well. So he's been in great form. He's also been hitting it really well. 10th for driving accuracy. And I think he's been in the top 10 for driving accuracy and greens in regulation in his last three starts. So his ball striking's good. He's also very comfortable in this part of the world, isn't he? He's twice a winner in China on the Asian tour. And he's been a runner-up in Singapore as well in the past at the Singapore Open. That was in 2019. So, yeah, he's comfortable in this part of the world. He's won on Paspalum Greens in Bahrain. That was really early on in his career. And he has multiple top five finishing on Paspalum Greens as well in Qatar, Mexico, Saudi Arabia. So, yeah, a level of comfort there as well. Yeah, I do think 14-1 is absolutely fine. That is the shortest I'd probably go. So, yeah, I'm happy to get on board with Casey this week.
15-time European Tour winner. Lost a playoff. It could have been 16. Three-time win on the PGA Tour again. Two playoff losses there as well. One of them famously to James Harn at Riviera. So, I would actually say, in terms of his PGA Tour career, potentially underachieved Paul Casey, but certainly on this tour, one of the stalwarts. And
yeah,
it's actually amazing to think he's actually already 46 years old. It's not that far away from the Magic 5-0, is it? So
it really isn't, no. It still looks like he's got plenty of game in him.
He
as
does.
Well.
That's the thing. Like, I think he's had these injury problems, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I think if you even go back to the first series of Full Swing, they're talking about his bad back. And I think he pulled out of the match play and It didn't go particularly well for him on live. I think that the point you made about we've got to respect these live players is true. And also with Casey, like, I think when you just see sort of like DJ finish 17th and 6th and 8th, and you can't really work out how much he cares until he gets to the majors. And then you sort of had the same with Neiman for a little while. And now all of a sudden he's kind of lighting it up. It's one of those things that once they're playing well and it's consistently well, like you point out with Casey, I think you have to just respect it. Regardless of what level it's at, and look, this isn't, you know, a field that you should be worried about taking Paul Casey in, I think is the kindest way of putting it about the rest of the field. So as much as it's actually a decent renewal of this event with some good names, Casey's the main reason for that, I think. So alongside Lowry. So yeah, I mean, look, respect to what Lowry's been doing. He's been playing incredibly well for the last few weeks, but we've seen him struggle to go over the line, and at 9-1 and very easily to pass up on him. Tom McKibben was probably the one of the group for me that I thought I could end up landing in.
Yeah, no, just, me too. I love his chances this week as well, to be honest. He's just been so consistently, but playing at such a consistent level, just doesn't look like winning though, does he? Like, it's just the thing. He just needs to just have that extra oomph on a Sunday. You know, I haven't really seen that, but still, I think you've got to stick with him. He's a great talent.
I think summarizing his career so far, I mean, obviously he's got that brilliant win, but like here last year, first after round one, second after round two, fourth after round three, 12th in the end, like almost kind of summarized, like he's always there or thereabouts, but
yeah, sums it up really.
The next step. So I wouldn't say he's always going the wrong way in contention. I think that's unfair, but potentially doesn't even quite get there is the kind of knock on him at the moment.
So, yeah.
Slightly bigger prices, definitely would have been interested. I was interested, ironically, after everything I just said, in Richard Mansell. I think if I was ever going to play him, this might be the week. It looks a really suited test for him. But
yeah, it does. Yeah.
Again, I think you're just playing for the each way value in that. And whether that is enough to make a pick, I don't know. So less on people I'm not betting, more on people I am. First thing, Brad, I guess before I go into this, and I'll obviously just let you go straight into Paul Casey there, but I thought that was a fairly straightforward selection for you. Anything else that you were kind of looking at from potentially, you know, building a not a model, but like a stat breakdown of how you wanted to approach this Singapore Classic before your next few picks?
I think like a level of comfort in this part of the world definitely is something you've got to consider, you know, whether it's been Asian Tour or playing in this a certain climate. But it's quite an exposed course as well. So looking at like courses like Qatar, maybe Bahrain even as well, they both use Paspalum Greens and they're both heavily sort of exposed and undulating fairways. So I think looking at those two, looking at showing up in this part of the world, having some history showing up in the heat. So yeah, just little things like that. And I think it's in, I don't think course history really will come into it. I don't think it's important that you would have to play last year per se. But yeah, it looks, I mean, we know it happened last year. The big hitters did have an advantage, but I don't think it is just that in a nutshell, because there's lots of trouble still off the tee. There's lots of waste bunkers that guard the fairway, and there's quite a lot of water in play as well. So I think it's more of a second shot golf course. So yeah, that's where I'm sort of at with it.
Yeah, and I think the stats kind of bear to that. Like, I know, and that's the interesting point I was really seeing, is, you know, how much kind of emphasis you put on distance, because Del Rey led the field in distance last year, finished third. McKibben was fifth last year in distance and finished 12th. Other than that, the rest of the top five in distance, best place finish was Tapio Pulkkinen at 23rd. So
exactly.
As much as distance does play, and I think it plays anywhere, and I think it's probably the default answer to most golf courses, I wouldn't necessarily get too caught up in it. I mean, like last year, it was fairly soft, and that obviously benefits longer hitters anyway. So if it's going to be slightly better this time around, then I think you can kind of have a mix of players. So it certainly didn't, distance didn't necessarily come into my line of thinking. One thing I was really interested in, Brad, and is, I think this is unusual. Maybe it could just be an anomaly after 1 year, one renewal, but three of the top five last year ranks inside the top five for strokes going around the green, which I don't think you see very often.
No.
I don't think there's anything really put in. And I haven't gone, let's go and find the best strokes going around the green player and put them in this week. It hasn't been my kind of thing. But I thought that was really interesting. Like, there was a bigger emphasis on that as opposed to the putting. There was a bigger emphasis on that as opposed to off the tee. And look, strokes gain approach is always going to play, but again, Ockie Strydom was second, Valimaki was 13th, but otherwise, Del Rey 25th, Schneider 33rd, Jung Hong Wang 28th in approach. So it was really just an all round get it in the hole somehow, yeah. Wasn't it? In the end, like, all of the top five finished inside the top 14 for tee to green, second, seventh, and third made up the top five. So look, an all round game is the answer, and that's the answer most weeks, but yeah, I think just wanted to kind of sort of flag those slight differences there. And the par fours seem relatively important. Ockie Strydom led them. He was 11 under par on them. Richard Mansell was 8 under par on them, finished 6th. Valimaki 8 under par, finished 2nd. So they seem to come into play as well. But yeah, really interesting to see if anything new kind of comes from this.
Yeah, I think we need to see more, don't we? I think over a few years, we'll have a much better idea.
Absolutely. So anyway, all that being said, the one thing I did like you mentioned there is the Qatar Masters. If anyone heard me on the Mayo Media Network show yesterday with Sky, then I already talked about this, so apologies for the repeat. But if it's the first time listening, I thought it was a massive Qatar Masters link. So Ockie Strydom has had two top tens outside of South Africa, outside of his win here and South Africa, sorry. And one of them was in Qatar. One of them was in Mauritius, sorry. One of them was Bahrain. And then he has 16th in Qatar. So already those three courses you mentioned come up to, to fruition. Then you've got Valimaki, who won in Qatar and was second here last year. Wang was third here last year, was a former winner of the Qatar Masters. And then it just goes down on this. Del Rey, third here, 16th in Qatar. Mansell, sixth here, ninth in Qatar. Waring, sixth in both. McKibben, top six in both. Ashamu, top 12 in both. Helikilda, Jordan, Matthew Jordan, Jordan Smith, Andy Sullivan, top 15, 20 in both. So, you know, just a lot of crossover between that and the Qatar Masters. So, with all that being said, Alejandro Del Rey was where I landed for my first pick. I've been here before this year already, Brad. Didn't necessarily work out for me, but I think there's just more to come from him. He finishes fifth and seventh at the end of 2023, goes into the Dubai Desert Classic, 10th going into the final round, shoots a 77, drops away. Raz Al Khaimah, pretty middling throughout the week, finishes 37th. Goes to Bahrain, fourth after rounds one and two. And then again, has a poor weekend, finishes 56th. And then he goes to the Qatar Masters, which we obviously like, or I certainly like as a link. And he's 12th going into the final round, 16th in the end. And look, you have to factor in the fact that he's not putting four rounds together. You can't just ignore it and just say, I will eventually do it. It doesn't necessarily work like that. But his skill set, Brad, coupled with his third place finish here last year, where actually best chance ever to win on the DP World Tour, he's a 54-hole leader, right? Would have learned something. It all depends, Brad, whether he's going to come back here thinking this was where I had the best chance to win, this is my time to do it, or I couldn't get it done here last year? And you have no idea how he's going to go into the week, I guess.
No, you don't. But you can also discount that last performance in Kenya, because that's just not a good course for him working at all. So, yeah, I mean, generally it's been quite a solid start to the season. And as you just said, it's just a matter of putting four rounds together. We know his skill set and the talent is there. Like, it's just a matter. It's going to happen soon, isn't it? And it could be this week on the course that he's got good memories of.
I hope so. I think that's kind of the way I'm going, and I certainly think if he's gonna, like, I think he's got to use his kind of part of the season up, because eventually the deeper fields are gonna come around the summer and all that, and it, you know, he could start to get a little bit lost in the pack if he doesn't start taking advantage of these soon. So keen for him to do that. Next for me, Scott Jameson. Again, much to do with that.
That was your first fancy, wasn't it? I remember you messed. Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? Like, we talk about all these players that we need to forgive bad sort of in contention, like Richard Mansell or whatever, and Tom McGibbon or whoever, just not getting the job done. And then you've got Scott Jameson, who's made a career of not really getting his job done. But I think there's just an element of, one, I think he's just a very good golfer who does pretty well in these level of fields. Two, he's very comfortable in Qatar Masters, which I love. He's been third there twice, including... And then second again. So he's played brilliantly there. And I just think that, factor all of that in, and the fact that he's playing in let's face it, a weakened field at this point, in comparison to his kind of normal standards, like what he's been like as a DP World Tour player. I mean, he's gone up against Casey Fleetwood, Rory, Lowry, more often than he's gone up against these types of fields, right? And I mean, I don't know if that's statistically true, so don't shoot me down if that is the case. But, like, I think from a field perspective, it's easier for Scott Jameson now to win than it probably was 5 or 10 years ago. And, yeah, those two third-place finishes in Qatar really sent me over the edge. And when you look at what he's done, he finished the 2023 decently in South Africa. Nothing special, not putting up any trees, but was solid. And then he was 31st at the Dubai Desert Classic. He was 10th going into the final round. 16 in Bahrain, fourth going into the final round, and as we know, rallied really late on at the Qatar Masters to finish third and really put pressure on the Hoshino pick there for me. And we haven't seen him since. And is that a good thing? I don't know. There hasn't been a massive opportunities to play, has it? But we don't know whether that's going to benefit him or not. He was sixth here after 36 holes last year, 11th going into the final round and finished 23rd. So look, he faded away, but. Yeah, I think for me, with what he's shown in recent years over the Qatar Masters, what he's shown here last, I think I'm pretty confident on Scott Jameson.
Yeah, I can definitely see the appeal. Are you gonna back him first round leader as well?
I think you've got to, haven't you? Yeah, this part of the world. So yeah, those couple of third place finishes are really what did it for me on Scott Jameson. If I'm wrong on that link, then so be it. I mean, there's just so much evidence in a 1 year sample size that I'm pretty encouraged. That's where I'm going for that. But
like it.
Any others that you thought about in this kind of range? I suppose we're not far away from your second pick, but anybody?
Let's have a look. I mean, Alex Fitzpatrick, a little bit. I thought I gave a good think about. Didn't get there. Jesper Svensson, I thought was an interesting one. But yeah, no, that them two were on the shortlist. They're probably the closest to me.
The only reason I didn't go with Jesper Svensson is because of the person I went for next. So I'll come on to that after you've done your second pick. But yeah, that's like Jesper Svensson was very live for me. It just happened to be that I think someone's performing similarly to him and there's a bigger price. So let's kick off your second pick, mate, and then I'll come on to that.
All right. I've gone with Kiradech Afnabarmrat. Well, it's the Barmrat, I call him. And yeah, he was the first name in my thoughts as well. You messaged me about Jameson. I replied, I think I'm going to be on Afnabarmrat. And yeah, it's been a pretty steady start to the year for him. He's been juggling between Asian and DP World Tour. He's picked up some pretty good results. His best results have come on the Asian Tour with a 13th place finish in Malaysia, and he finished 14th place in Macau last week. And he did close with a 64, which I always like to see, so that's going to leave a good taste in his mouth coming into this week. He doesn't have far to travel as well. He'll also be better prepared than most. It's like sort of similar climate in Macau. And he's literally played everywhere, hasn't he? He's played here, there, everywhere in his career. But he has always been most prolific in Asia. He's won 9 times, and 7 of those wins have come in Asia. He's also won on Paspalum Greens on the DP World Tour before in China back in 2015. He's also won on Paspalum Greens in Malaysia. Has multiple top 5-10 finishes on that surface. So, yeah, there's a lot to like. And it just, he feels a bit overdue, like a big performance. Like, we know he can win. If he gets in with a chance, I do fancy him. And, yeah, I love his chances this week. And he's probably going to have to be a first-round leader bet, like, yeah, Jameson, because they both come out hot.
Didn't they? Feels a little bit like, you know, your fate on Thursday, where they're going to go for the week. But Afib Bahma, 80-1, 6 places, seems like the sort of potentially the best option. I know you can get slightly bigger in other places, but I think with Afib Bahma, it's one of those ones where, other than feel, like I said, I think feeling wise, Afib Bahma is better than this kind of quality of field more often than not, and big player, knows how to get a win, etc. Statistically, I don't think you're going to look at him and sort of jump to him, are you? So it's definitely a beautiful thing in this part of the world. Definitely overdue. I think for me, with him, it's, he just got a bit lost. Like, I think he reluctantly went over to the PGA Tour, didn't really make friends over there, learn the language, didn't feel necessarily comfortable, came back and played on DP World Tour, struggled a little bit, went on to the Asian Tour, sort of mismatch. It feels to me like if he can just get settled, which it seems to be that he's going to sort of play in the DP World Tour more often than not, and then sort of flex in these Asian Tour events, I think that would really be beneficial for him. So excited to see what he can do when he settles down.
No, I completely agree. I think he'll definitely benefit from a bit of stability. He's just been too far everywhere, hasn't he, in the last few years. He also, I forgot to add, he hit the ball quite well in Macau. He was 13th for greens in regulation. So, yeah, I think hitting greens might be important this week. So we shall see.
And those international series events are obviously getting a lot tougher, right? Like, there's no.
Yeah, the fields are really strong.
Yeah, like you've got all the live guys basically trying to get their well ranking points in them. So, guys that are not in majors are going over there to kind of, I mean, not all of them, but the guys that want to try and break into the majors are trying to force the hand there. And a lot of the young guys with David Puge and people like that.
You've got players like Sebastian Munoz missing the cut.
Yeah, exactly that. So I think international series tournaments mean so much more than they used to in terms of form lines. And so good to see him playing well over there. Mm-hmm. Next one for me. So I mentioned I didn't go for Hugo. I didn't go for it's because I went for Hugo Cassard. There was a bigger gap between the two of them when I put him up at 100-1. He's now coming to 80-1, 70-1, 7 places. There is kind of that little bit of a tightening in between the two. But I just thought Cassard's been a bit overlooked. Like, he's been so good in his rookie season. He missed the cut on his first start at Joburg, and then made 8 cuts in a row since then. 12th in Bahrain and 2nd in Qatar, really works well for the sort of form lines we're looking at. Mm-hmm. I thought he was brilliant behind Hoshino on that final day. For the most part, there was a couple of errant tee shots, right? And he got a bit lucky a couple of occasions. But for the most part, he did.
All things considered, I thought he did well. Yeah.
Like, first time in contention. Did he? I don't even think he even won on the Challenge Tour, right? Like, I think he was just steady more than, or maybe he did. But
I'm pretty sure he won, yeah.
We could be
just checking for you, mate. He won in India, funnily enough.
There you go, even better. So yeah, he got that one win against Manuel Vieira and Joel Gurevich in India. He lost a playoff at the Czech Challenge as well. So if you do like the kind of distance thing, he's played well in Czech, which is always a good sign. I think that he's a late bloomer. I don't think there's any denying that. 31 years of age and making his sort of first rookie season on the DP World Tour, but it's almost been like a really nice gradual build in his career that seems to be paying off. It's not too fast, too soon or anything like that. And that might just be playing in his hands. And look, you can be in contention for the first time, be the 54-hole leader, give it all your all on Sunday and then disappear for a while. And all he's done since a couple of week break is finished 24th and 23rd, 8th going into the weekend, last time out. 14th going into Sunday, the time before that. So he's just been there or thereabouts, like last four starts, top 25s or better. I just think he's playing really well. I think he's playing really well. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that the Qatar was his best finish. So I'm going to stick with Hugo Cassard, who is now 80 to 16 places.
Yeah, it's just taken to the tour like a duck to water, isn't it? Really impressive. And yeah, he was in my thoughts as well this week as well. I think he's just been really impressive. And yeah, I think if you look back, some of his top finishes came in China as well, the UAE. You know, it all bodes well going into this week. And also, he's the same age as Pavon, and Pavon's coming back this week. He must be inspired by what he's doing at the moment. So, yeah, that could work in his favour as well.
I wonder if they're friends or not, or whether he can learn from him in the practice round. That'd be good to boost his confidence. Next pick for you then, Bradle. Third or final pick for the Singapore Classic.
Yeah, I'm gonna chance Jason Scrivener. I think 100 to 1, 7 places might be the best, or 110 Sky bet, but... Yeah, he hasn't had the best of starts of the year. He missed the cut twice from five events. I think his best finish was tied 47th, which came at the Raz. So, yeah, but things have improved. Last time out in South Africa, he finished tied 17th. He hit the ball superbly, ranking fourth off the tee, first on approach, his first tee to green. And I've always found Scrivener to be quite a streaky player over the years. He's the type to build on a good performance. He hasn't played this course before, but he's not a stranger to this part of the world. He's had some experience playing on the Asian Tour throughout his career. He's also got three top 10 finishes on Pathlon Greens. He was 7th at Yas Links, 9th at El Hamra, and he's been 9th at Doha in Qatar. So, yeah, those top 10s, especially at the Yas Links and Doha, they especially catch the eye, given the exposing nature of the courses. So, yeah, I think he is a sneaky bet this week. He wasn't one of the first names on my shortlist, but after looking at him a bit more in detail, I got quite excited. So, yeah, hopefully he goes well this week.
Yeah, look, I don't know how much, you know, similarities in terms of the courses, but certainly in terms of location, like the Hong Kong Open was pretty much where he made his money.
Yeah,
right?
He loved it. Yeah, I think it's like two third place finishes. So
yeah, a couple of thirds and a tenth over there. And I just think that, as you sort of started the show with kind of people feeling comfortable in the area, that's certainly him. And it's always stuck in my, I think I've probably mentioned this in the past, so again, people that regularly listen, this repeating myself a bit, but I always remember how impressed I was on that final day in Abu Dhabi when Tyrrell Hatton won and won pretty brilliantly. But when Fleetwood faded with a 73, Rory hit a 72, Mark Warren, David Lindsay, 71, like Scrivener, 66, matched Tyrrell Hatton, finished in second place. And that's a big event for Jason Scrivener. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, it's still to this day his best.
Best ever finished, isn't it? Yeah.
So although he's obviously a winner in Australia, like, I just think that, you know, how he performed against sort of best in the world that week was really impressive. And he's played well in the Scottish Open. He's played well in Dubai multiple times. So, yeah, I think I'm pretty impressed with Jason Scrivener. It's hard to get a read on him, and you know, you're sort of saying that, you know, you're impressed with his last start, and that's all it really takes, isn't it? Sometimes it's just to it's just to have that one good start, and rather now when he's a 110 to 1 or 100 to 1 than to kind of figure out a 40 to 1 and when it's kind of gone. So do see the line of thinking there. Last one for me, Sam Bairstow, player that you talked about for a long time, Brad, was certainly interested in him. He's 125 to 1 with 6 places, 100 to 1 with 7 places. You might just want to take the extra place, to be honest. But I've been really impressed with Bairstow. And, you know, you put him on a radar, and in typical fashion, it's kind of quite early to put him on the radar. I think you're sort of besting him on kind of mini tours and things like that. But, you know, since he's been on the DP World Tour, it's been brilliant. He's 32nd at the Alfred Dunhill, 7th after 36 holes. He was 34th in Mauritius, which we like, 23rd at the Ras Al Khaimah, 23rd again in Bahrain, which is actually, you know, he was 4th going into that final round there, so it was really impressive. And then Qatar, he was 6th at the halfway stage after a really slow start on the Thursday, 7th going into the final round, and and didn't finish it off. And then he missed a couple of cuts, and you think, okay, is that Sam Bairstow's run done? Like, purple patch. And then, you know, he misses the cut in Kenya and the SDC Championship, and all of a sudden, straight back into the Johnson Workwear Open 15th, inside the top 11, first two rounds. So, considering how well he has played since joining the tour, how well he's played in those correlating events that we like in terms of Qatar and Bahrain and Mauritius, I thought Sam Bairstow was worth chancing still when there's seven places, 100-1 offer.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with everything you said. Like, he's just another player that's like taken to the tour in really great fashion. Similar to, well, not quite as similar as Ugo Kassar, but yeah, he's still been very solid, you know, very solid, and yeah, showing what he's about.
Yeah, I think he hasn't had that kind of, like, Svensson and Kassar have had that couple of contentions, and they would have had a chance to win, and Bairstow hasn't had that, but he's not been a far away from putting himself in that position. Like, he could have gone into Saturday a couple of times, right into the mid.
Yeah, I think Bahrain and Qatar, he could have, with a better finish, like if he shoots something in the 60s there, he might be looking at a top 10, top 8 finish, something like that, yeah.
I think Bairstow's just treading water slightly, and that we, you know, we could be looking at just someone that finishes tied 25th every week and until he actually figures it out. But I'm willing to find out. I think signs are pretty promising. I was interested in Hao Tong Lee in the end. Like, I think he's actually playing better than his odds suggest. I think he's hanging around and doing it. I mean, Oki Strydom could come back here and lighten.
He could do. He really could. And he's been showing a little bit of promise recently as well, hasn't he?
He just has his places, right? And then another one that played well on the course last year, Marcel Schneider was third here last year inside the top four for the final three rounds. And actually, when you look at where, like, it's been pretty bleak for the most part, but where he has played well, 29th in the Mauritius Open, second going into the weekend, 29th in Bahrain, and then 23rd last time out in Kenya. So it could be that just a return to this after a little break is where he wants to be. But I couldn't get past the four that I'd kind of picked and stuck with those in the end. Any extra shouts for the Singapore Classic, or we've moved on?
No, I think we're done there, mate.
Lovely. So let's go on to the Valspar Championship. We know everything I think we need to know about this, but for people that don't, second shot golf course, I think it's pretty fair to say, but a real examination, like tee to green, just an all-round game, definitely required. You can't overpower it. Not a course, I think driver can be left in the bag, but you do also need to use it. It's just somewhere that you can't go and launch it 320 yards and go find your ball again.
It's a bit of a shot maker's course, isn't it?
Yeah, like that reflects in the people that have won here, right? I think it's absolutely fair. I mean, there's been a couple of players that have won with, you know, a really solid putter, and, you know, Sam Burns has got a streak in two of his wins here. But generally speaking, it's got to be ball striking all the way around. And when you look at Sam Burns' wins in 2021 and 2022, he was 17 under both times. He shot 15 under in 2021 on the par fives and 10 under on the par fives in 2022. So that made up all of his score, really. And then you go to 2019 when Paul Casey won at 8 under. He was 15 under par on the par fives. And Taylor Moore was 7 under par on the par fives last year when he was 10 under overall. So that plus the, you know, the Bermuda, I know it's kind of overseeded, but that was kind of Bermuda greens, I thought, for me, was, you know, the par five, tee screen examination with Bermuda putting. If you can find all of those, then you're onto something, which, you know, would play almost all the time, right?
Yeah.
And then a couple of trends that I sort of found. Seven of the last 12 winners had finished 12th or better at this golf course before winning. So Taylor Moore and Charles Schwartzwood both missed the cut before winning here on their debut, but Gary Woodland, that remains the only player to actually win on their first start in the Valspar Championship, and to have one of those in the whole sort of renewals of this is quite rare. So I think it does pay to have a look, even if, you know, with Taylor Moore and Charles Schwartzel, they do miss the cut on their first start and then go on to win. Like, just the experience of what is required to go around there is big.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, I think, like, five of the last 12 winners breaking through, Brad, for their first PGA Tour win. I think that will get people looking at maiden winners, and I absolutely appreciate that, but 11 of the last 12 had also won at some level before that, so whether it was on the Korn Ferry DP World Tour or anything like that, so there is a big breakthrough opportunity on the PGA Tour, but you want someone that has been used to winning, which again, pretty true most of the time. And then the last one, top 10s on the season. 11 of the last 12 winners have posted a top 10 finish on the season before winning here. And 8 of the 12 have had 2 top 10s or more before winning here. So
I'm liking these trends. I didn't know any of these. So.
This is what I spend too many hours writing down. And
I love it.
I don't necessarily know if it actually adds value in the end. But ultimately, I think it's one of those that the quickest summary from that is that I think you need to have had a look at the golf course. I think you're someone that needs to know how to win, regardless of whether it's on the PGA Tour or another level. And I think you want to have had a top 10 in the season. I don't think you want to be coming into this golf course finding form, which has been true at Bay Hill players, you know, everywhere, really. So with all that said, listen, it is. It's a really tough course. And I like that. I love that about this stretch of...
this is one of my favourites on the tour. I love it. Absolutely love this course.
Let's go into the market then. So Xander Schauffele 15-2, Sam Burns 12-1, looking for his third win here. Justin Thomas 16s, Jordan Spieth 18s, Brian Harman 20s, Sungjae Im 25s, and there's 28 and bigger to rest. Any temptations for you at the top of the market?
No, not at all. I can't really trust anyone up there, to be honest. I really can't. I mean, Xander, it's just got to be taken on because he probably will get over the line soon, but he's just not in contention very good, is he? So at 15-2, you've got to take him on. Sam Burns, 12, can understand it, but God, no, can never take him at that number. JT coming off a missed cut, but wasn't actually that bad. It's been showing signs. Still no. I mean, Brian Harman was probably the one that I can trust the most up there.
100%.
So he's the one, really, if I was going to. But even then, I don't love the number. But if I was absolutely going to have a bet in this top, I'm talking like 35-1 and down, it would probably be Harman. But I've skipped through all of them because I think I just can't. I don't trust any of them. I don't see there's much value. I don't think they're playing well enough to warrant being that price. So yeah, I've just overlooked all of them.
I guess in Burns's case, like I was really he was playing really well going to the Players. Had that really good Saturday, didn't he? There at Sawgrass, and then just completely ejected on Sunday, which I think he kind of spoke about being a possibility because he was, you know, attacking at pins and trying to move up the leaderboard. So don't mind that too much in that respect. I think if anyone deserves the kind of price they are, I guess it's him with being a two.
Yeah, probably. Here. I just still think it's a tough price to swallow.
It is. Yeah, like I'm never going to bet Sam Burns at 12-1. Yeah. But if you get to do it anywhere, it's going to have to be here because
I get that. Yeah, I do get that.
I think for me, Xander is just unbettable. Like I literally don't look. He could win and is still winning. I just don't get it. I'd hate to be the person that was doubling up Xander Schauffele and Shane Lowry this week. I'm sure there's someone out there that's doing it. You look on the face of it, like Brian Harman, like most recent major winner, excellent performance last week for the most part. Did obviously, you know, let himself down maybe on that 16th hole in the end. But again, you look at his course form here, he's got a 14th, a 25th and a 5th. The 14th promised to be better. The 5th was about as good as it got. And then, of course, he's had missed cuts here. But I think that's true of pretty much everyone. I mean, Hadwin's won here, finished 7th, finished 12th and also had 4 missed cuts. So it's definitely one of those courses, a little bit like Players, where you generally see quite a lot of volatility. And as we saw, Charles Schwartzel and Taylor Moore have won here immediately after missing the cut. So Gary Woodland, another example, win on his debut, and then he's had like 6 missed cuts since then. Obviously, other finishes in between, but definitely to say it's a bit volatile. But my first pick, 35-1, Nick Taylor. I just think he's an improving player that just seems to be absolutely, you know, brimming with confidence, Nick Taylor. And look, it's not been missed. It's 35-1 in the market when, as you said last, before we come on, that last week he was kind of 150-1.
Yeah.
On every, I think probably the last 3 DraftKings, or maybe 3 of the last 4 DraftKings shows I've done with Matt, I've sort of said that he's one of the most undervalued players week in, week out, just based on, you know, the fact that he does win. Like he won Pebble Beach in 2020, he won Canadian Open over Tommy 2023, he won over Charlie Hoffman in the Phoenix Open this year. 2 playoff wins, coupled by 2 and 4 strokes, really dominant in both of those. I just think he's a really good player. He's probably what people were maybe hoping that Corey Connors developed into. You know, Connors is built on a foundation of ball striking, and maybe Taylor doesn't have as much of that in abundance, but it's been solid enough, and that's what kind of draws me to him. The approach game, he's had two top 10 weeks in strokes gained approach, been 28th and 21st in that category the last 2 weeks, and his all-round game has been, you know, pretty solid as well. So whilst he wouldn't leap off the page in terms statistically, I think with Taylor there's a little bit more to him, and it's just his extra grit. And then 24th on his debut, he was 10th going into the final round. When he was 24th, he was 6th going into the final round. And then last year, he obviously finished 10th, his best finish at this golf course, getting better every round. I think he's evolved as a player. I think he's someone that, yes, you probably want to be looking at fancy prices as opposed to 35-1. But as we've kind of pointed out there wasn't anyone that leaped off the page for me in the top market. And he was the first one I sort of looked at and thought, you know what, I really do like his price. So I'm kicking things off with Nick Taylor, 8 places.
I totally understand that. He's just been so consistent, hasn't he? He just looks like he's levelled up, and his irons have been so good. So yeah, I can understand. I was on him last week for similar reasons. So it's
just... Yeah, I think I see it. Like I do generally just believe he's evolved, like as a player. He's won a couple of times the last 2 years, and just seems to have. I think anyone that when they win on the PGA Tour, they feel a lot of confidence. But when there's one win with 6 years in between your next one, it doesn't really have the same impact, and all of a sudden you reel off a couple back-to-back years, it changes things. So we've seen what it's done for Wyndham Clark, for example. So
yeah.
I don't know if Taylor fits in that bracket yet. He's probably not far off. So happy with that. Let's go with our next pick, Brad. So you're first and also my second. Mm-hmm. So you kick things off.
Yep, Sepp Straka. His price has come in now. It's 40-1, 8 places. But yeah, he's had a bit of a tough spell the past few weeks, but he definitely found his game last week at the Players. He finished tied 16th, ranked 10th for tee to green, 16th on approach. And yeah, he's another player that's just he's typed to build on a good performance. So I didn't really need much encouragement, especially when I looked at the prices, the opening prices. He opened at 80s, there were 60s everywhere. He just stood out. He's another player. Like we were saying about Nick Taylor leveling up. Straka has leveled up the past couple of years. He was part of a Ryder Cup winning side, runner up at the Open, top 10 at the USPGA. He's twice winner on PGA Tour. He is definitely leveled up. He's previously won in Florida at the Honda Classic, and he's more than comfortable in Bermuda greens. I mean, that's where he does his best work. He's surprisingly only played here once, which was back in 2019. I don't know why he doesn't stop here more often, but he opened up with a round of 66. He was leading after round one. He did struggle after that, but I think he was pretty early on to his PGA Tour career, so that's understandable. And he finished 46th in the end. But yeah, that round of 66 is certainly an encouraging sign. That's a good course fit for him, and I mean everything else that's sort of points towards that as well. And it just was a bit of a no-brainer. It really was with him this week. I mean, even at 40-1, the price has come in, but he still look. That's probably where he should be in the market. You know, that absolutely is where he should be. So, yeah, I really like his chances this week, especially given the odds up the top.
Yeah, I think that is the thing with Straka, is that you hit the nail on the head, is where he belongs. So I think at 40-1, it took some thought. When he was 60-1 and 66-1, it was the most obvious bet, I think. And then once you dig in from that value perspective and realise you do like him, I still think the 40-1 brings decently true at 8 places. And like you said, best round of the day on his debut opening up. And then even his 69 on Saturday was one of the better rounds. I think 66 was shot that day. There's a few 67s and 68s, but 69 still very solid. And look, 76 final round is tough, but when you look at some of the players, I think Paul Casey shot 72 when he won, Jason Kokrat 71 in second. It looked like a tough day for scoring in general. So yes, it was 76, but it probably looks worse than it was based on the other performances that day. So not too disheartened with obviously kicking things off really quickly and then following it up.
No, not at all.
Next for me, I mean, it wasn't next in my the way I selected them, but I'll go in price order. So Lucas Glover is 60-1, 8 places. I ummed and ahed about this. I was going to go with Doug Gim. So that, spoiler alert, if Doug Gim wins, I'll be, you know.
Oh, mate, I also looked at Doug Gim. I think everyone's probably looked at Doug Gim this week, though. He's on fire.
He's unbelievable. Like, he's playing unbelievably consistently, but I just think that he'll finish 20th and just keep that consistent up. And I think when you look at Lucas Glover at similar prices, he has that range of outcomes where I think he can win and I think he can obviously miss the cut. But that's not to really say too much. I think every golfer can do that every week. But it's just hitting his iron so well. And ultimately, that's the foundation of playing really well here. I'd like to have seen him hit the driver a little bit better, but he's been inside the top 35 at a consistent rate this season. He's gained on approach in all but one of the events this season. The one time he didn't, he missed the cut. So it's very clear what he's building his foundations on this season. 12th out of 36 holes here last year and third at the same stage 3 years ago as well. Just looks like Glover's had a couple of opportunities. He was even 7th out of 36 holes and 7th out of 54 holes previously as well. So 4 times now he's been inside the top 12 at different stages of this event and just not quite put the 4 rounds together. But I think when you see the ball striking uptick from Lucas Glover, or certainly the approach play uptick from Lucas Glover, I think you have to stand up and take notice. And I think he's the kind of wily veteran that can come around and win here. And I wouldn't be surprised if, well, I probably would be surprised as Lucas Glover, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was to have a couple of wins here in his career, because it looks like a golf course that's really suited to his game. And, and he's certainly shown promise over the few years he's been here.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said. I mean, he's just, as you said, showing like that he's coming into form with his irons, and that's him, isn't it? There's certain players, like we said, we talk about Tom Hoagie, like when Lucas Glover is showing it with his irons, that's normally a sign that he's not far away. And he has been gaining on approach. He was hitting it straighter last week as well, which is good to see. So I responded really well as well after that round of 75. At the Players with a 69, so yeah, I think he looks a good bet this week. He really does.
Yeah, I just like it. Look, I think Lucas Glover can go any different way, right? I think he's a hard one to predict, but I think he's got the foundations to be a really good bet. So
I think so.
There. Next one for me, I thought was relatively obvious, and that's why he's coming in the market. Maverick McNealy, 60-1, 8 places. You can get on 888, 50-1 generally for those kind of place terms. Yeah, McNealy, interesting player. Obviously injured last year, that massively affected him. But his 67 on debut here last year put him in fourth place, obviously the fourth best round of the day. And then his 70 on Sunday was solid as well. So yeah, a couple of middle rounds, a little bit like Sepp Straka, I suppose. He had 2 decent rounds and 2 bad ones, with the back-to-back 74s on Friday and Saturday. But the way he's been playing, I mean, he struggled for so long in 2023 with that injury, but 2024, he's been really solid. He's got 3 top 11s in Florida, which I really like. One of them was 2nd on the Corn Ferry Tour, the Lacombe Suncoast Classic, 9th for the Players last week, 11th for the Honda Classic. So I love all those. Not that I necessarily think Florida form even leads to massive success in this course particularly. It's a tougher test, but it's always good to see.
It's always worth noting, for sure.
Exactly that. He hasn't had his best approach play. That would be my one concern with him this season. But 6th in Phoenix, where he's better placed after rounds 1 and 2. 13th in Mexico, where he played really strongly over the weekend. And then again, 9th last week at the Players, where he's 4th at the end of Friday and Saturday. It just feels like, to me, like Maverick McNealy is rounding into that form that we saw from him for so long, when people thought he was just a certainty to get through. Look, as we always say, we don't really deal with certainties on the PGA Tour, and he kind of goes against my trend of he hasn't even won on the Corn Ferry, right? But he was, you know, very good. Another one that came out of Stanford, followed in Tiger Woods.
Yeah, he was brilliant, wasn't he? Yeah, right. Talk of the town at one point, nearly, wasn't he?
And I think he's just had a tough time with it. I mean, he's not been able to build consistency. I think when you're the son of someone that's worth $7.4 billion, whatever it is that his dad is, or whatever he sold his company for, you maybe lose that edge of having to prove yourself. Maybe it makes him work harder, I don't know. But for whatever reason, I think Maverick McNealy's just had a tough time just having to adjust, and then obviously injuries getting in the way. So keen to see what he does here on a course where he's proven something.
Yeah, definitely. And he's sort of making up for lost time at the moment, isn't he? He looks like he's got the bit between his teeth. And I've just been looking at him. I can't believe this. His scrambling's been unreal.
Yeah.
He's eighth at the Phoenix, fourth Mexico, fourth again at Cognizant. And he was first for scrambling last week at the Players. It's just like,
so there's one or two things that people are going to say to that is that his whole foundation is him scrambling himself out of trouble. And that's not going to last. And it's not sustainable. Or
bogey avoidance is massive.
Or scrambling is just a massive part of this week, which is how I'm taking it. Like,
yeah, 100%. Yeah.
He's obviously doing that well. And look, I think everyone's going to struggle to hit greens here. They're not the easiest to hit. So if he's the one that can get up and down the most at the moment, then that's going to only help. Yeah, that's where I'm at with Maverick McNealy. Mm-hmm. So that kind of kicks me off with the opening three people. We both agree on Straka and McNealy and Glover for me. Let's go into your next pick.
Yep. So I've gone with Sam Ryder. I think best price is 8. Well, you can get 90-1 6 places Betfred or 80-1 8 places 88 Sport, which I think is the better price. Yep. And he's just creeping into some decent form. He's finished 21st at the Cognizant and 16th last week at the Players. He's obviously a Florida resident. And he has had a couple of top tens in his home state. Although he struggled here over the years. He's had 3 missed cuts and a 68th place finish, but that was until last year because he had his best result. Yeah, he finished 19th, and so yeah, that's certainly caught my eye. He hit it solid enough last week. He gained strokes across the board. We know he loves putting on Bermuda greens. He's ranked inside the top 5 for putting the past couple of weeks. He just feels like a bit of a late bloomer. He's 34 years of age, but I think he's at his highest rank in the world rankings at the moment. He looks like a player that's constantly improving, and he's still in search of that first PGA Tour win. And I'm sure he'd love nothing more than to get it in Florida. But I feel like he's another player that's getting better and better. And yeah, with him trending at the moment and his approach game looking good, I feel like I want him on side this week, and at the odds, I think he's worth chancing.
I have no idea why, but for some reason I get Adam Schenck and Sam Ryder confused every now and then.
That's a new one on me.
Yeah, it's new to me because I just had it in my head that Sam Ryder made a run here last year, and it wasn't. It was Schenck. So for whatever reason, I mean, I don't think Schenck wears those trousers that Ryder wears.
The Van Rooyen specials. Yeah.
So, you know, maybe that's just the easiest way for me to differentiate them. I don't know what about Schenck and Ryder I can't differentiate, but there we go. Sometimes results merge into one. Maybe it's just the fact that I know he plays well in Florida and kind of had that in my head. But yeah, Sam Ryder, definitely an improving player. One that worth keeping an eye on. I didn't get there just based on, you know, it looks like it's just 1 out of 4 starts here, but playing well. And like you say, you've given plenty of good reasons there for people to jump on board.
Mm-hmm.
Best price now is 100-1 6 places on Victor Perez. I think potentially the 80-1 8 places is the way to go for him.
I think so, yeah.
And he's fine in form. And ultimately, it's all through ball striking. He's second in ball striking on tour, 14th in strokes gained approach, 20th in tee to green. He was 16th for the Cognizant Classic, where he was fourth after 54 holes. And then he ran out of holes at the Puerto Rico Open, where he finished third. He was really charging there.
Mm-hmm.
He did miss the cut. He made the cut on his debut here last year, but he couldn't quite break the 70 mark. So he didn't really climb the ladder as such. He was just incredibly solid. Is probably the best word for it. He finished 45th. But for someone to come here on their first start, go 70, 71 and 70 on the final day with a 75 really kind of move them in the wrong direction. I'm happy to give Victor Perez another look. I think he's a player that everyone sort of hoped would make the jump from the DP World Tour. He didn't, despite some good flash starts. And I mean, it was the Players, wasn't it, where he played so well.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, finished 9th, didn't he?
I think it was, what was that, maybe 2021, maybe 2022. I can't remember exactly when it was now, but that kind of etches in your memory, I guess. When you're thinking about Florida form, we know he's played well in a match play. He's finished 4th there.
Yep.
He's the WGC champions as well. So yeah, the tied ninth from the players is always a positive. I think he's played well in these types of tests, even on the DP World Tour. So yeah, I'm just, for someone that's, you know, had a couple of decent major finishes, for someone that's played well in the Players' Championship, someone that's played well in the PGA Championship, I think Perez, whilst he's hitting the ball as well as he is, it was just eye-catching how well he's hitting the ball, like second of all.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
I know it's limited starts, but they're the most recent starts and they're so good. So happy to give Perez a go at 80-1, eight places there.
Yeah, love that.
That, I think, is me done. Taylor, Straka, McNealy, Glover and Perez. But you've got a couple more for us. I think you're becoming a bit of a Mackenzie Hughes apologist.
I am. I was going to say I've been away for a few weeks, but not much changes. Well, at least one of us is putting up Mackenzie Hughes. But I think you've only put him up once.
Yeah, I've already put him up this season. I think I went with the...
Oh, you went for him the week that I didn't.
Yeah, we're alternating between him. But yeah, I can certainly see the signs of Mackenzie Hughes, and I'll let you go into as to why you're picking him.
Yeah, he's looked pretty good, like, for the most part this year. Recently, he's had two solid performances back to back in Florida. Finished 30th at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and then 26th last week at the Players. And yeah, his game just looks in good shape. He was ranked 11th tee to green. Gained stroke off the tee and on approach. Now he's mainly excelling off the tee, but it's good to see. And it just hasn't been a good hunting ground for him over the years. He's missed 3 of 4 cuts. But when he did make the cut, which was in 2009, he went on to finish 13th, which does offer some encouragement. He's come close to winning in Florida before, finishing runner-up at the Honda Classic in 2020. And yeah, I just feel as though he's hitting it too well at the moment to pass up on him in the triple digits, because he's not usually like hitting it this well. Like, ball striking wise, he usually relies more on his short game. So the ball striking is there. It hasn't got going on the greens yet, which is, like I said, normally one of his strengths. And yeah, we know he can win. He's a 2-time winner on the PGA Tour. I just think a better week with a flat stick and he won't be far away. He feels close to putting it all together. That's what I'm going to keep telling myself as I bet him blindly each week.
100-1, 8 players about a person that's won 2 times in recent history and has got a decent course finish is never going to be too far away from the recipe you want, right?
I think it's not, especially when he's flashing with his ball striking. I think got to go with him.
I think that same sort of logic applies to someone like a Billy Horschel and people like that who are in this kind of price range. I again didn't get there. I've just seen there's people who made such obvious claims, but in this kind of bracket, Joel Damon's going to be a relatively popular pick.
Yeah, definitely.
All kind of makes sense. I mean, I think he's fresh in people's memories because of the Netflix Full Swing show.
Yeah, but, and then Neesmith, both love week. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, who else? I mean, in this range, it's quite a good range. I mean, this is literally my range. I didn't really, as I said, pay much interest to the top of the board. So yeah, there's loads in this range. I think an outsider could win it this week. At least that's what I'm hoping.
Well, let's go then to that biggest of outsiders. Well,
the big one, yeah. Last but not least, this guy is talented. He's highly fought after. Ricky Castillo. He's in the field on a sponsored exemption this week. He's a California boy, but he went to the University of Florida, where he had a stellar amateur career. He reached as high as 13th in the world amateur rankings. This will be his first non-major PGA Tour start, and I'm hoping he has the similar performance to when he made his first professional start on the Korn Ferry Tour. That was about halfway through the Korn Ferry Tour last season. He got in the Wichita Open on a sponsored exemption, ring a bell, and he went on to win via a playoff. He's had an incredibly solid start to his first full season on the Korn Ferry Tour. He's currently ranked 11th on the points list, and his last 5 results, he's finished tied 20th, 5th, 7th, tied 13th and 5th last time out. So yeah, he's in great form, lots of ability, and yeah, with a top finish here, he can earn himself a start next week. That's obviously the motivation. Obviously, the win would be crazy. It would get his card. That's how he got his Korn Ferry Tour card. So you never know. I mean, it's been a crazy season so far, hasn't it, on the Peugeot Tour? A bit of normality returned, as we said earlier, with Scheffler winning back to back, but he's not in the field this week, so it's wide open again. And who knows, Nick Dunlap and a bird. They've all proven the gap from college golf to PGA isn't as big as it used to be. You know, so why not Ricky Castillo? You might be looking at that and thinking, hey, it's my time. So yeah, I'm also going to take him top 30. I wanted to take him top 40, but the odds are crap. So yeah, I'm going to go top 30 with him instead.
He has, when you talk about that win at the Wichita Open, beat Adrian Dumont de Chassart in a playoff and yes. Jones there, beat Alejandro Tosti, beat Parker Coody, beat Jake Knapp. Long way of saying that it looks like his win is sort of looking even better as it goes along, right?
Yeah.
Aging really well is the word I'm looking for. Chan Kim was 23rd, Chris Cotter up 23rd. It was a decent field. Jimmy Stang has been playing decent golf on the PGA Tour this season. So that all of those in that kind of field, and he went and won it, you know, early on in his career, is certainly promising. And Martin would say he's played his golf, university golf in Florida. So plenty to like there with Castillo. Very shrewd pick. I think he'll be popular in the end because the right people are sort of making the point, but good selection there. Brad, I think that's it. I think there was maybe a couple of players I looked at. I looked at Bud Cawley because I think he's played well since he came back, but couldn't quite get there. I looked at Matty Schmid because he's playing so well, but I think probably potentially the wrong golf course for him.
Somebody missed out for me was big odds was Austin Cook, who I was mentioning to you earlier. He's never come into this event in good form. Like, no, even when he had his best finish of ninth, he came into it off the back of five missed cuts. I couldn't believe it when I saw it earlier. And he has limited starts now on the PGA Tour, and obviously his main focus is getting his card back via the Korn Ferry Tour. I just think he's coming into it now in good form. Like 11th in Panama on the Korn Ferry Tour. Then he backed that up with a 10th place finish at the Puerto Rico Open. He's coming into this in good form, knowing all too well this is a golden opportunity to earn his car back. So yeah, I was really tempted to chance him at 400-1, but I've instead I've gone with him in the top 40 market at 4-1. I think he's an interesting option.
I think he is at this stage of his career. He's probably that top 40 is the modest bet for him, right? And you know, he has won though. He lost in a playoff to Martin Laird at the Shriners, and Matthew Wolf was in that playoff as well, so he knows what to do. And look, it speaks volumes that they've got him back here. I'm not quite sure how he's got in the field. I don't know if it was a sponsor's invite.
It's not a top 10 from Puerto Rico. That wouldn't
Could potentially be that. That would make sense. But yeah, even when you say about that ninth place finish and not coming in good form, he was the 36th hole leader as well. So he's really, you know, interesting. I think it's one of those ones where you can definitely look in the placement markets. I think that's probably what we're looking at. But
yeah,
we get it. Brad, let's summarise our picks on both tours. So I've gone with Alejandro Del Rey. I think it's 40-1, six places is the best you can get now. Scott Jamieson, 60-1, six places. Hugo Cassard, 80-1, six places. And Sam Best, over 100-1, seven places for me over there. Your picks for the Singapore Classic?
I've gone with Paul Casey, 14-1, six places, Skybet. I've gone with Kirilek Afabamrat, six places, Skybet. I've gone with Jason Scrivener, 100-1, seven places, Paddy Power.
Yeah, and then over in the Valspar, I've started my card with Nick Taylor at 35-1, eight places on Skybet, 40-1, Sepp Straka, places again with Skybet, Lucas Glover, 60-1, eight places again with Skybet. So Skybet obviously don't like my picks at all. Maverick McNealy, I think you can get 66-1, six places, 50-1, eight places might be the way forward there. And then Victor Perez is in there for me, 100-1, six places, or 80-1, eight places, depending on how you want to play it. Brad, your picks for Valsman?
Like yourself, I've gone with Sepp Strecker, 40-1, Skybet, 8 places. I've gone for Sam Ryder, 80-1, 8 places. That's with 88 Sport, or you can go 90-1, 6 places, Betfred. Then I've gone back to Mackenzie Hughes, 100-1, 8 places, Skybet. And then as the big bomb, I've gone Ricky Castillo, 225-1, Ball Sports, 8 places. I'll throw in Austin Cook top 40 as well. Sorry, Tom. Guy bet.
I had top nationality bet last week where I took on Robert McIntyre with Martin Laird at evens, and that won. I'm just trying to find potentially another one. I think Victor Perez will win the top fringe if you want an odds on shot. I don't necessarily know that. I think. The trouble is on the PGA Tour, they're really competitive heats at this point. I think there's potential. I'm just looking at how he's kind of been playing over the last few weeks. Sungjae Im isn't really doing it. I know he's got the potential to do so, and he's actually played well here in the past with 4th and 29th. But I just wonder if KH Lee can beat him in the top Korean. He's playing some decent golf. KH Lee's played well here in the past. But that would probably be just scratching around for one there. I haven't found one as particularly obvious.
The one I considered was Fred Biondi, who was Ricky Castillo's teammate in Florida. I considered him to be top South American at 6-1, but his price has come in big time now to 4-1.
He's taking on Akavaria.
He's taking on, Akavaria. Vegas would be the danger, the main danger, I guess. Toasty as well. I mean, he's toasty, making me hungry. He's obviously Florida as well, Florida alum. So yeah, he's a threat. So yeah, it isn't a clear cut one like what we're looking for.
I thought I'd have a little quick brief look there. But Brad, it's been great to have you back on. Good to have you back in the saddle.
It's been great to be back, mate.
Events now until the Masters, so not long. A little bit of a countdown to the Masters. Just an early programming thought on that whilst we're here. Monday night football, Nottingham Forest versus Tottenham, unfortunately takes precedent that week. So I will probably do an early show on the Sunday with Matt, if he obliges, going through the Masters field. And then me and Brad will put out our final picks on the Tuesday evening time. So that's the kind of plan for the Masters. But I think we'll probably be talking about it in the build up anyway.
No doubt.
Odds will obviously fluctuate. But just want to put that on people's radars that our main pick show for that week will be on the Tuesday evening of the Masters. Brad, thank you very much. Good luck with your picks this week.
You too, mate. Thanks for having me.
I hope that we can get a winner at the Singapore Classic or the Valspar Championship. So thanks, everyone, mate, and we will catch up during the week.